Welcome. My name's John Hennessy. I'm the Chief Historian at Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, and we're happy to join with our partners in Spotsylvania County to bring you this walking tour of the area right around Spotsylvania Courthouse. Now, during the American Civil War, no community in America suffered more or more variously than did Spotsylvania County. Armies marched through Spotsylvania, they camped upon Spotsylvania, and most notably, of course, they fought four battles, major battles, in Spotsylvania County. Farm fields turned into battlefields, farmhouses turned into headquarters and hospitals. Civilians were dislocated, their fortunes demolished by war. For slaves, the war meant something very different, an opportunity for freedom. And what we're going to do today is by using the courthouse area, which was Spotsylvania's historic downtown, if you will, we're going to use the courthouse area to tell the story of Spotsylvanians caught amidst war. The tour includes 11 stops. 8 of them are walkable right around the courthouse area. The walking portion of the tour will take about 45 minutes. The first stop is at the courthouse itself. The wartime courthouse was badly damaged during the war. The current building is an almost identical structure built about 1900. Go to the courthouse and start your player there. You should be standing in front of historic Spotsylvania Courthouse. At the time of the Civil War, this building had been standing for only about 20 years. The courthouse had been moved here in 1839. Now, surely a lot of people expected the location of the courthouse at this country crossroads to stimulate a great deal of development. It did not. Over the next 20 years, only 3 additional churches were built here, Berea, Zion, and Christ, all of which we'll talk about today, but almost no other development here. Still, Spotsylvania Courthouse was the political, cultural, and social heart of Spotsylvania County. It could often be a very busy place. Early each month, they would hold court days here. Now, the court of that time was the equivalent of the modern Board of Supervisors. Not only did they rule on legal cases and court cases, but they also made laws and administered for the benefit of the people of Spotsylvania County. Court days were a busy, busy day, a combination of business, fun, and commerce. If you showed up here on a court day before the American Civil War, you would likely have seen men running for office, canvassing. You would have seen men trying to sell or hire out slaves. You would have seen exhibitions of horses. You would have seen salesmen selling newspapers or other periodicals. Now, the first court day of each year traditionally was hiring day. And this was when local farmers who had more slaves than they needed for their own work would seek to hire them out for the remainder of the year. One correspondent wrote about the court day here on January 1st, 1855. This is a quote for a placeholder. There was an unusually large attendance at courthouse on Monday, it being hiring day. Large numbers of servants were in attendance. Last year's prices were down nearly 30%. Negro men hired last year from $100 or $150, this year went for only $100 for prime hands, in consequence of which there are doubtless more unhired servants in the county at this time than for many years past. Now, the courthouse was also a focal point for social activities. It was on the courthouse green that Spotsylvania County would traditionally observe its 4th of July celebration each year.
Such a profusion of good things of this life you don't often see. The jingling of silver and china, the long line of tables fairly groaned under the weight of the fat of the land, gentle hands engaged in the commendable purpose of dispensing frozen custards and ices, which seemed to have the most happy effect of bringing down the mercury to a breathing point. I would give you the bill of fare, but I'm sure you would be mad with yourself that you were not present. Virginia Herald, July 7th, 1855.
The annual rhythms of politics, culture, and society went on here year after year, unbroken, until the American Civil War. The Spotsylvania County that faced Civil War in 1860 was a vastly different county than it is today. The population was about 11,000 people, but almost 60% of those were enslaved. There were 873 households listed in the census of 1860. More than half of them owned slaves. Almost all the residents of Spotsylvania County were farmers, well over 90%. And their lives were governed by the imperatives of the field, sow and tend and harvest, year after year. Now, Spotsylvania went to war far more easily than did Fredericksburg. Fredericksburg was not quite as dependent upon slaves and slavery for its well-being as was Spotsylvania. And when the debate about secession came along, there really wasn't a question about voting, for example, for Abraham Lincoln. The question was how soon and just exactly how Virginia should leave the Union. It was at this courthouse that these debates over the future of the Union would take place in Spotsylvania.
The Republicans will not acknowledge property in slaves, or protect it, or agree to its extension. If Virginia remains attached to the remnant of the dilapidated old Union, she must submit to insult and degradation.
The Union of the South is the safety of the South. The interest, honor, and sympathies of Virginia demand that she should unite with the Southern states.
Just days after Fort Sumter, Virginia seceded. The vote confirming secession occurred here. The tally? Spotsylvanians voted in favor of secession 1,323-0. Spotsylvania's youth rushed to the flag. About 17% of the population would serve in the Confederate Army. There were some unionists here, not many, generally quiet, and by far the vast majority of Spotsylvanians enthusiastically supported the war. With the onset of war, Robert Dabney, who was the clerk of the court here at Spotsylvania Courthouse, took all of the county's land records, wrapped them in paper, packed them in a wooden box, and buried them behind the clerk's office to await a quieter, less threatening time. Our next stop is at the historic jail. As you're facing the courthouse, turn to your right, follow along the front of the courthouse building, and around the corner, and you'll see the jail standing along Route 208, just 100 or so yards from the intersection with Brock Road. Once you're there, turn your machine back on. When the courthouse moved here in 1839, so too did the county jail. The original jail built here burned in the 1850s, and the building that stands here now replaced it. It was finished, to much ballyhoo, in 1855.
The county jail is now nearly complete and nearly ready for the reception of gentlemen boarders. The walls are over 2 feet in thickness and the stronger chambers lined with seasoned 3-inch oak plank. Persons taking quarters will be able to resist all attacks of burglars, and robbers may enjoy their slumber in all the sweetness of a perfect tranquility of mind. It was erected by Mr. Joseph Sanford as principal contractor and cost about $3,000.
Now, of course, the jail worked in tandem with the nearby courthouse, and we have the accounts of many cases that were adjudicated, from the minor to the major, from petty theft to murder. In 1855, very soon after the jail reopened, the local newspaper recorded the trial of a 70-year-old slave.
The only case of general interest before the court was the trial of Simon, slave of Mr. Stapleton Crutchfield, for an attempt on the life of his manager, Mr. Jonathan S. Alsop. It appeared that Simon had been slightly corrected by his manager, and half an hour after, while Mr. Alsop's back was towards him, he struck him over the head with a stunning blow, which was repeated 3 or 4 times. The court was unanimous and decided his offense punishable by death and appointed Friday, August 18th, for his execution.
In this case, probably because of Simon's advanced age, citizens petitioned the court asking for the death sentence to be commuted, and Simon was in fact not executed at Spotsylvania Courthouse that August of 1855. The jail seems like a proper place to take a minute to talk a little bit about slavery and just how important it was to Spotsylvania County. More than 50% of the households in Spotsylvania owned slaves. The largest slave owner owned 119. Another owned 113. Most owned just a handful or just one. Slaves worked the fields, they worked the mines in Spotsylvania County, they tended to the homes of the more wealthy slave owners. They were critical to the economic wealth and health of Spotsylvania County. While most slave owners treated their slaves reasonably well, the realities of slave life were invariably brutal, if not physically, then emotionally. Lizzie Van Wart, who grew up in northern Spotsylvania County, left this description of her family's involvement with slaves.
Father hired 60 men slaves to work on the farm and in the mines and sawmill. Every Monday, the men, or hands as they were called, came up to the office to draw their rations. These consisted of a pint of molasses, 6 herrings, 3 1/2 pounds of smoked bacon, and 6 quarts of Indian meal. Twice a year, they received a suit of clothes, a cotton shirt and pants in summer, and a woolen suit in winter. They could never go off the place without a written pass from my father or my husband. If they did, they were arrested by any white person, brought to their masters, and whipped.
A slave who lived not far from Spotsylvania Courthouse left this description of the persistent role of fear in her life.
My mom was cook and used to clean house. I liked dusting pot best because I could get my hands on the books and the pictures that old master had spread out all over his reading room. There was one book that I was crazy about. Didn't know nothing of what it was about, but it had a lot of pictures. One day while reading in the reading room, I heard a step coming from the kitchen. Before I could move, the door opened and someone came in. It was Massa. He looked at me and saw what I was doing, but he never said nothing. I closed the book up and put it back into place. Was scared for many a day that I was going to get a hiding. Was a long time before I fetched any more books.
To give you a sense of just how important slavery was to Spotsylvania in the years before the American Civil War, the slaves of Spotsylvania were worth probably twice as much as all of the land in Spotsylvania County. Now, here at the courthouse and at the jail, slaves had little business to conduct on their own account. They, of course, were often sent here to do the business of their owners. Occasionally, they would be tried here, as in the case of Simon, and sometimes confined here. When war came in 1861, the slaves of Spotsylvania had a decidedly different view on that war than did the white residents. For slaves, the war was an opportunity for freedom. And many of them, thousands of them, would seize that freedom when the Union Army came near enough to make escape likely and successful. The summer of 1862, when the Union Army first arrived in Spotsylvania County, thousands of slaves off of farms and plantations in Spotsylvania fled into Union lines. And as the war went on, slaves became less and less common in Spotsylvania. While we're here, notice the former church building right across the street from the jail. This was Berea Christian Church. Today, it is the Spotsylvania County Museum. The church was built just a few years before the American Civil War. It was, as I said, a Christian church, non-denominational. It was badly damaged during the war. A shell passed through the front door and lodged unseen in one of the walls. It fell out during a fire here in 1899. Services continued intermittently at most of Spotsylvania's churches throughout the war. We do know that at Berea Church, services were being held again by September of 1865. A local woman, Eliza French, who lived at a place called Sunnyside on what is today Route 208, remembered in her diary that she attended here on September 3rd, 1865.
Mr. Cutler commenced a meeting at Berea today, preached a splendid sermon from the last chapter of Luke, had a large congregation. I wept over the vacant seats. Made so by death.
The next stop on the tour is at Christ Episcopal Church. To reach Christ Episcopal Church, you'll need to walk carefully along the shoulder of the road in front of you. As you face the road, proceed to your left. The church is about 200 yards down on your left-hand side. Once you're in front of the church, turn on your player once again. You should be standing in front of Christ Episcopal Church, built about 1841, just 2 years after the courthouse relocated to this crossroads community. This was the first of 3 churches that would eventually grow up around Spotsylvania Courthouse. Christ Church's most prized possession is the King James Bible, printed in 1754 by the King's Printer in England. The congregation still uses this Bible on special occasions, even today. Christ Church, like all churches in northern Spotsylvania County, was a real focal point for the community in the years before the American Civil War. People lived oftentimes on farms that were widely dispersed. They didn't see each other that much. And oftentimes, church on Sunday was the only time neighbors got to meet each other. The church was also known for holding fairs and other special events that would bring the community together. Like most churches in this part of the world, Christ Church would be touched by the war. The arrival of war to Spotsylvania cast a gloom over the entire community. Helen Bernard, who lived not far from here, wrote in April of 1862,
"A death-like gloom has settled down over the whole country. We feel that we are, for the present, a conquered people. I am so afraid that I will forget what is becoming in a woman and a Christian. Such fiery indignation has taken possession of my soul that there seems no room for any other feeling."
For the first 2 years of war, Spotsylvanians would suffer outrage and annoyance, but generally not outright destruction. That would change in 1864. This building, like almost all churches in this part of the world, was used as a field hospital. Its walls reportedly bear the scars still of bullets fired in the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse in May of 1864. Like most churches, it would take years to recover from the war. In fact, its fortunes would wax and wane over the years until into the 20th century. There were only 6 women still remaining as members of this church. But today, the church is thriving again. It's outgrown its original walls, added a community center on the back, and continues to be a focal point of this community in Spotsylvania County. As you're facing the church, take a short walk to the left of the church where there's a small cluster of graves. Find the graves of the Harrison family. Once you're at the gravesite, turn your player on once again. You are standing in front of the graves of the Harrison family, Edgar, Maria, Edgar Jr., William, and a young baby. The story of the Harrisons is typical for so many Spotsylvanians during the American Civil War. The Harrisons were members of Christ Church, but they lived about a mile and a half away, near what today we call the Bloody Angle at Spotsylvania. In fact, their house would be used as headquarters by Robert E. Lee for a time during the battle. When Edgar Harrison went off to war, he left behind Maria to tend to not just his farm and his slaves, but also his family. And she did so all by herself and against great odds. Throughout Spotsylvania, women fought for dignity, for survival, as war swept over their lands. Union raiding parties were common in this part of the world, and it was the women left to defend against them. A woman who lived not far from here described their experience in a morning in 1862.
"One morning, a raiding party of United States cavalry came to Sunnyside. They were Michigan troops, wearing squirrel tails on their caps. Grandmother French told them how dependent she and her colored people were upon the corn for food, and begged them to leave her some. They took every grain and swept the corn house. Then, going to the stable, they bridled and led out her mules. When they persisted, she seized one of the mules by the bridle. She said, 'May the curse of the orphans and widows God rest upon you.'"
All over Spotsylvania County, women fought similar battles. At times, they became hopeless, as surely Maria Harrison did too. Mary Jane Boggs Holliday, who was also a member of Christ Church, wrote of her despair in 1864.
"There are a great many things which ought to be done, but I sometimes think it does not matter much. It may be all destroyed before long by Lincoln's marauding troops. Isn't it dreadful to think that we are in the midst of civil war? I feel as if I should like to enlist myself if I were a man."
The Harrisons owned a slave named Joseph Walker, and Joseph Walker has left us one of the only memoirs of a slave who lived in Spotsylvania County. Doesn't always provide much detail, but it certainly tells us a great deal about the experience of Maria Harrison and her family on the day the Confederate Army arrived at her doorstep in May of 1864.
"General Longstreet formed the line of battle in our front yard. two lines of infantry and one line of cavalry. My mistress asked if there was any danger, and we all clustered around the officers in the house for safety. But in a few minutes we were ordered to get out as the firing was going to begin, which it did like a thunderstorm. All I could hear was, "Go to the rear!" We managed to get through the three lines of soldiers safe and unhurt, and went to a house now known as the Dabney House. On Thursday, my mistress sent myself and Henry Johnson back to the house, and the only thing we could see on the farm was a pig. My mother's house was pulled down to make breastworks, and the yard and garden was used as a burying ground.
Many women were reduced to almost begging for help. Catherine Bullock, who lived on the Chancellorsville battlefield, wrote to the Confederate government in 1864 looking for help.
"I once had a home and contentment, but through the will of God and fate, I am homeless. When the dreadful battle of Chancellorsville was fought, my home was entirely destroyed. The house was torn down by necessity, entrenchments cut all over the place, my servants all gone to the Yankees. I am now left without any support but the labor of my own hand. It is for labor that I have come to you. My husband is a private, and I cannot live upon part of his pay and take care of a child. If it is in your power to give me a situation, I beg your favor. Catherine Bullock, Spotsylvania County."
Catherine Bullock, who wrote that letter, was in almost the exact same condition as Maria Harrison, who was buried here. The Harrisons would go on to be longtime members of Christ Episcopal Church, and for them, like all of Spotsylvania, it would take years, if not decades, to recover from Civil War. Our next stop on the tour is at the Spotswood Inn at the junction of Brock Road and Courthouse Road. To get there, proceed carefully back along the road shoulder, beyond the jail, and back to the intersection. The pillared building in front of you is sometimes called Sanford's Tavern or Spotswood's Hotel. It was built before 1838, by a man named Samuel Alsop, who was then the richest man in Spotsylvania County. But by 1853, it was bought by a man named George Sanford. If Spotsylvania Courthouse had a big man, it was George Sanford. He owned 700 acres around the courthouse itself. He would often provide catering for court days and other events on the courthouse lawn. He built a livery and stable to serve passers-by. And of course, his hotel became a focal point for daily business as travelers passed along Courthouse Road and Brock Road. The building would be used extensively during the Civil War. General Jubal Early kept his headquarters here for a time. Robert E. Lee slept here, really, in the front room on the east side, that is, to the left of the door. The upper floors were used as a lookout. The building was also hit many times by artillery shells. When it burned in 1905, 9 explosions kept firefighters away. The cause of the explosions? Shells embedded in the building. Local newspapers include many references to Spotswood's Hotel or Sanford's Tavern. In October of 1861, a Fredericksburg newspaper recorded this incident on the front steps of the tavern.
"Among the incidents of the day, one man, under the influence of corn wine, attempted to ride through the hotel. At the top of the step, the saddle girth gave way. Horse and man rolled over, horse on top. Upon being extricated, he remarked that his head hurt him a little."
Just after the Civil War, a former Union officer visited Spotsylvania Courthouse Battlefield and stayed at Spotswood's Hotel. He remembered Sanford and his wife.
"The tavern is a big, square building, and mine host Sanford is a big man, who possesses much language and politeness, and not much else so far as concerns eating and sleeping. The little bill was $16 for bad cornbread, worse hominy, and the crazy buggy with a horse. 'Not fast, gentlemen, but sure,' said Sanford. Mrs. S., who is number 2 as to order of marriage, but number 1 in influence, was a most disagreeable party, though she meant to be civil. Thoroughly shrill, vulgar, and a shrew."
Sanford and his family lived not in a hotel, but in a house called Cash Corner on the opposite corner. The Sanford son was killed during the war, and by war's end, the family was cultivating just 15 out of the 700 acres it owned around Spotsylvania Courthouse. Sanford would claim the loss of 80,000 fence rails. After the war, Joseph Sanford got the contract to reinter Confederate dead from Spotsylvania in the new Confederate cemetery, not far from the courthouse. We'll go there a little bit later. For now, I'd like to focus your attention on the road, the Courthouse Road, the road that leads into Spotsylvania Courthouse from Fredericksburg and conversely leads from Spotsylvania to Fredericksburg. During the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse, it became a major passageway for Union wounded heading back toward Fredericksburg. Focus, if you will, now on the roads that pass through Spotsylvania Courthouse. From the north comes Brock Road. It was along this road on May 4, 1863, that Stonewall Jackson and his ambulance passed. According to legend, they stopped at a well that stood at the crossroads here, and the general was watered from that well. To your east, or to your right, is modern Route 208, historically known as the Courthouse Road, linking Fredericksburg with Spotsylvania Courthouse. The battles here transformed these roads into passageways of suffering. One Confederate soldier remembered seeing refugees along these roads, civilians, women, and children, fleeing the battle that was to come.
As we went up through the town, the Yankees were shelling it, thick and fast. We met 500 or more women and children, some of the women with two little babies in their arms, other children holding on to their mother's dresses, crying and screaming for their lives, the shells flying. There was a large gully on the south side of the road, and some of the boys told the women to get in the gully. They did so, and I never saw them anymore.
The Courthouse Road was a passageway for Union wounded to get to hospitals in Fredericksburg. A Union surgeon described the scene along Route 208 in May of 1864.
It was the most sickening sight of the war, this tide of the wounded flowing back. One has a shattered arm. Another has a head seamed and bandaged, so you can scarcely see it, and he weaves like a drunken man as he drags along through the hot sun. Another has his shoe cut off, and a great roll of rags wound around his foot, and he leans heavily on a rough cane broken from a pine tree. Still another sits by a puddle, dipping water on the wounded leg, which, for want of dressing since the battles, has become badly inflamed. So I passed hundreds in riding a few miles.
Such scenes did nothing to endear Spotsylvanians to either war or to the Union Army. When the armies finally did leave in 1864, many local civilians rejoiced. One local lady remembered, voiceover, "Oh, it did my soul so much good to see the Yankees skedaddle. They have a number killed and wounded now lying in the field. The old dead one is lying behind our barn, and you can see them everywhere you go. I think there are 10 in the cornfield. We have 4 wounded we intend to on that battlefield. They cannot live, but still we cannot leave them to suffer. We simply wash their faces and carry them water and something to eat. I have said I never would do an act of kindness for one of them to save their lives, but I feel altogether different when I see them suffering." One local woman recorded,
"It seems as if some great funeral procession had lately passed through. The whole country has a laid waste look. There are graves all round us. An air of suffocating loneliness reigns. The wind has a peculiar howling sound, as if ghosts were mourning over sad remains. There is no peace in living in this God-forsaken country. We are suffering from such lawless times as existed in the Dark Ages." Catherine Coos, Laurel Hill, Spotsylvania County.
Our final stop on the walkable portion of the tour will be on the courthouse lawn back in front of the historic courthouse. Proceed there and turn your player back on. On April 11, 1865, 2 days after the surrender at Appomattox, Eliza French of Sunnyside recorded in her diary,
"Hear a thousand rumors, feel sad, sad. Our noble and good general and chief surrendered to the enemy on the 9th. It is hard to believe. Oh, my heart will surely break. After all we have endured, to lose our best of causes, to be in subjugation to the enemy."
While many Spotsylvanians felt great bitterness over their experiences during the war, life marched on. Robert Dabney, in 1865, went behind the courthouse and dug up all the lands books that he had buried there years before. Turns out only 3 had been water-stained, And while many communities had sent their most precious records to Richmond for safekeeping during the war and lost them in the fires there, Spotsylvanians remained, and still remain today. The courthouse itself was a wreck, badly damaged, hardly able to store anything with safety in 1865. And then, surrounding the courthouse, were the dead, hundreds of them. The Union Army returned in 1865 and buried most of the Union and some Confederate dead, but these were not formal burials, and it was left to the people of Spotsylvania and Virginia to tend to the permanent burial of Confederate dead. In the Fredericksburg area in Spotsylvania, the Ladies Memorial Association was formed in 1866, and in 1867 began the effort to reinter the dead at the Confederate cemetery. The man selected to do the work, Joseph Sanford. Beyond the physical destruction entailed by war, the personal hardship was almost unspeakable in Spotsylvania County. The value of personal property among white residents of Spotsylvania dropped 92% during the war, much of that due to the exodus of slaves. By the end of the war, more than one quarter of white residents were living on some form of public assistance. In 1865, the leaders of Spotsylvania took it upon themselves to put an ad, a plea, in the newspapers of Baltimore.
In 1862, a large proportion of its laboring blacks deserted their owners. The fencing, the farm implements, the growing crops, the goods on hand, and in many cases the farm buildings were destroyed. The amount of black labor which remained faithful has been set free, and the small cropping attempted for 1865 has been seriously interfered with. More than one half of the arable lands of the county have been laid waste. The class of the suffering poor is increasing daily. If speedy help does not come from some quarter, actual starvation must fall upon many families.
By 1870, the population of Spotsylvania had dropped by almost 30%, almost all of that due to the exodus of former slaves. But beyond the physical changes brought by war was the psychological reckoning. As John Waller of Cedar Point in Spotsylvania County lamented in 1865,
"We are a ruined people. Old Spotsylvania is laid waste. Our public and private property destroyed. I have lost all my best labor teams, utensils, provisions, all the earnings of my life. And my dear John Mercer, my second son, who was killed defending his native soil. The Confederacy has fallen, and the whole estate is not worth 1 cent to any of us. We have lost all with the Confederacy."
Normalcy, though, would slowly return. In 1868, Spotsylvania Courthouse held its first tournament day here on the courthouse lawn once again. Again, catered by Mr. Sanford. They had jousts and races, and the tournament winners, the men, were permitted to select the Queen of Love and Beauty. And in 1868, the first post-war Queen of Love and Beauty in Spotsylvania County was Miss Agnes Sanford, daughter of Joseph Sanford. As we talk about the destruction of war and the slow recovery of the white community from the devastating impacts of Civil War, we have to remember that the majority population of Spotsylvania County had a vastly different reaction to the outcome of the Civil War. John Washington was a slave who actually lived in Fredericksburg, but he crossed the river, as many Spotsylvania County slaves did, in 1862. And his words speak to the most important legacy of the war, especially for the majority residents of Spotsylvania County.
"A most memorable night was when the soldiers assured me that I was now a free man. Before morning, I had begun to feel like I had truly escaped from the hands of the slave masters, and with the help of God, I would never be a slave no more. I felt for the first time in my life I could now claim every cent that I should work for as my own. Life had a new joy awaiting me."
This concludes the walkable portion of the tour. There are three remaining stops, each nearby, each accessible by a short drive: the Confederate Cemetery, Zion Methodist Church, and the Stubbs one-room schoolhouse. You can do these in any order you wish. The Confederate Cemetery is track number 9 on your player. Zion Methodist Church is track number 10, and the Stubbs School is track number 11. Proceed to the next stop of your choice. Pick the right track on your player and turn your player back on. You're standing in the middle of Spotsylvania's Confederate Cemetery. The challenge that faced this community in the aftermath of war was immense. Thousands of men had been killed in the 4 battles here, and at best, most had received hasty burials. Many had received no burials at all. One local resident described a scene on Spotsylvania Courthouse battlefield in September 1863.
Here I met a sight that can never be forgotten. Hundreds of dead soldiers were lying about, not at all putrefied, but darkened by the summer heat, still so lifelike that anybody who knew them would not have found any difficulty to recognize them. They obviously never had been touched. There was nothing disagreeable about them. I was particularly struck with the position of one corpse, who behind the breastwork had his loaded musket to his shoulder, obviously taking aim. That these people had not been touched, much less buried, was only natural, as there were hardly any males left in that part of the country, the few remaining having enough to do with their own household and farm affairs.
In 1865, the federal government sent burial crews scouring the 4 battles to reinter Union dead. Those burial crews did their jobs reasonably well, and in fact, many of them went beyond the call of their duty and also buried Confederate dead as well. But by 1866, people across the country, north and south, were clamoring over the condition of the graves of the fallen on various battlefields. And so the Union, the federal government, started an effort to formally reinter the dead from these battlefields in national cemeteries. And so virtually all of the dead from Fredericksburg, Chancellorsville, Wilderness, and Spotsylvania are now buried at the National Cemetery in Fredericksburg. But the federal government made no effort to reinter the Confederate dead, and that was left to the southern states. Across the South, an organization called the Ladies Memorial Association formed and created chapters. There was one in Fredericksburg and one in Spotsylvania as well. And the primary task of the Ladies Memorial Association was to give proper burials to the Confederate dead. In 1866 and 67, those efforts took form here at Spotsylvania Courthouse. The Ladies Memorial Association hired Joseph Sanford, great entrepreneur of this part of Spotsylvania County. They hired him to reinter the Confederate dead from Spotsylvania Courthouse battlefield. Over the next many months, he did. Hundreds of them. All told, about 600 were reinterred on this quiet hilltop here. Organized by states, many of them with only slight identities known, perhaps some initials left on a headboard or on a nearby tree, or some markings on some rotted clothing in a hasty grave on the battlefield. Over time, we've come to know who more and more of these men are, and in fact, the National Park Service is continually trying to explore the identities of the men buried not only here, but in the National Cemetery in Fredericksburg. Today, there are about 600 graves here, all of them arranged neatly and quietly according to state affiliations when known. But the fact is that most of these dead on nearly all of these battlefields were and remain unknown. The dead in this cemetery, the dead in the National Cemetery at Fredericksburg, the 3,000 more dead in the Confederate Cemetery in Fredericksburg, all of these graves, all of these souls, all of these lives lost, testify to a commitment to principles. And whether we agree today with the principles that were sustained then by these men's efforts, we can argue with the sentiment of one soldier who wrote in his diary shortly before he fell in 1864.
Should it be my lot to die in the present struggle, let the thought that I die in defense of my country console you. And when peace, with its happy train of attendants, shall once more visit this land, let it be your greatest joy to teach my child that I was one who loved my country more than life. This is the only legacy I can bequeath to him, but it is one that a prince might well be proud of.
This is Zion Methodist Church at Spotsylvania Courthouse. At the time of the Civil War, this church was virtually brand new. Built in 1859, 40 members or thereabouts, the church was a member of the Methodist Episcopal Church South. In the 1840s, the Methodist Church had split over the issue of slavery. The Methodists had traditionally been largely anti-slavery, but there was a growing number of Southern churches that were less enthusiastic in their opposition to slavery, and so they split off. And when this church was formed in 1859, this church became a member of the Methodist Episcopal Church South. It's a very simple brick church, had pine floors, heated by a wood stove at the time, with kerosene lanterns to light the sanctuary. Zion was one of three churches right around Spotsylvania Courthouse, and the newest at the time of the American Civil War. The war didn't really touch the area around the courthouse until 1862, when several times the Union Army swept through the area. During one of those visits, members of a New York regiment spent some time inside the church. A member of that regiment wrote about it. He described a scene that surely must have offended the congregants of the church had they seen it.
The church is a perfect bedlam, as it is filled with soldiers, some scuffling, some whistling, some playing cards on the little plain table in front of the pulpit, while one independent gentleman in his shirt sleeves occupies the minister's chair in the pulpit, combing his hair, and occasionally stops to admire his handiwork through the medium of a little pocket looking glass.
After 1862, the church would never again be visited by Union soldiers, at least so far as we know. Instead, the war would rage around Spotsylvanians. While the church continued in operation, apparently, the community around it began to suffer, sometimes hunger, always deprivation, and sometimes even depredations at the hands of Confederate soldiers. In 1864, battle raged around Spotsylvania Courthouse. For 13 days, the armies battled, maneuvered, and dug in the lands around Spotsylvania Courthouse, in the lands around Zion Church. Zion Church stood just behind the Confederate lines, the earthworks the Confederates built. We were on the opposite side of the road from where we stand today. For a time, General A.P. Hill made his headquarters in the church, and we know that various officers used the church as a refuge. During the fighting on May 14, 1864, the church came under fire from Union artillery about a mile away. It suffered significant damage. A member of the church after the war described the damage done to the church during the battle.
The church was very materially and badly damaged by shot and shell from the Federal artillery during the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse. The roof of the church was literally torn to pieces. The gallery was torn down, together with the pillars that undergirded the same. The end of the church, facing the Federal guns, was two-thirds broken down, and side walls shot through and badly damaged. The windows were all broken, so much so that new ones had to be put in the place of the old ones.
The church would make a claim to the federal government for damages done during the battle by Union guns, but that claim would not be paid until 1905. After the Civil War, Zion Church became a church like so many others in Virginia, a small country church serving the needs of a handful of families living about the countryside. In 1940, the church got electricity, and the church today continues as a vital part of the Spotsylvania community. Of all the churches in Spotsylvania, perhaps Zion is most conscious of its history, and over the years has had homecomings and special days commemorating the church's ordeal during the American Civil War. Today, many people drive by this church, so plain and simple, without any idea that it was once, for just a few days, caught amidst great events, visited by famous men, and scarred in a way that it would take decades to recover. But recover it has, and today it remains just a vital part of the Spotsylvania Courthouse community. The last stop on our tour of the area around Spotsylvania Courthouse is at a site that was not here during the Civil War, the Stubbs School, one of the last one-room schoolhouses in Spotsylvania. It's at 8722 Courthouse Road on the grounds of the old Spotsylvania High School, now the Marshall Center. Once you're there, turn your player back on. Few things in America are wrapped in more nostalgia than one-room schools. They're really the symbol of rural America in many ways, made famous by shows like Little House on the Prairie. In 1919, there were 190,000 one-room schoolhouses in America. Today, there are fewer than 400 left in use. Most that survive, like this one, have been preserved as museums or landmarks. And most that have been preserved, like this one, have been moved from their original rural locations to more accessible sites. This, in front of you, is the Stubbs School, moved here in 1999. It was a one-room school built specifically for the use of African-American residents of Spotsylvania County. It originally stood on Stubbs Bridge Road, not far from Lake Anna, in the southern part of Spotsylvania County. Before the Civil War, all schools were private, and none were open to slaves or free blacks in Spotsylvania County or anywhere else in Virginia. There were a few charitable schools for the underprivileged, supported by churches and members of the community, but none of these were open to black residents of Spotsylvania, be they free or enslaved. Education was the domain of those who had the money to pay for it. But after the Civil War, Congress mandated public schools in the South, and in 1870, Virginia created its own system of public schools. When you look at a one-room schoolhouse like this one, some of the romance that surrounds a place like this is justified. When this school was opened in the 30s and 40s, schools were the focal point of the community. The teachers in these schools sometimes influenced an entire generation of children in a rural neighborhood. Students who attended sometimes spent years with the same children, their friends. This was a world of homemade lunches, baseball in the sandlot, Red Rover come over, and bug in the gully. But education in a school like this was also hard. The teacher was the principal and the janitor. Whatever else needed to be done, the teacher did. Children hauled wood and water, and a trip to the bathroom meant a trip to the outhouse, no matter the weather. This was the world not of physics and civics, but of reading, writing, and arithmetic, of McGuffey readers and recitation. In addition to being a reminder of a time when public education was much different than that which we know today, the Stubbs School is also a reminder of a time when Virginia's schools were segregated. In fact, the Virginia Constitution required the segregation of public schools. State law acknowledged that absolute equality was impossible under those circumstances, but nonetheless pledged that the greatest effort would be made to maintain equal facilities. That was a promise not kept, and it was this lack of separate but equal facilities in Virginia that prompted court cases, resistance, and ultimately Virginia's involvement in the famous Brown versus Board of Education decision in 1954, which struck down the concept of separate but equal. Throughout its history, the Stubbs School was exclusively a school for African Americans. The school closed in 1943. All one-room schools for African Americans in Spotsylvania closed by 1952, when the county's African American students were consolidated under one roof in the John J. Wright Consolidated School. Spotsylvania schools desegregated entirely in 1968.